So the conference is now being recorded. So hello everyone, my name is Carl. I'm going to be leading the Quorum of Observers meeting tonight, and we're going to go over a couple people who really need help. And this is going to be a theme that we're going to get into in the coming weeks, where we're going to be doing roughly two court cases a week. That we're really going to try to focus on and get people to call in for and put the pressure on. And I think for
Hello.
this week, hello?
I'm so sorry. This is Barbara from Texas.
Okay. So for this week, you can find that information about the two court cases we really want to focus on in the call to action page. So, if you're able to go to committees on the site, and then you're able to go to Quorum Observers Committee, once you go there should be a page called Call to Action. And that is where the information for those two cases is. So this week we have the Ronald Paulson case, which is scheduled for December 20th, and the case is in California, and all that information is there. And the second case is the Mabel Marson case, and that is in Connecticut. And the call information should all be there as well. And really, what these two cases are on, and where we seem to really want to focus right now, is with mortgages. So they're both eviction cases related to some mortgage or property issue, and there are certain bullet points that are listed, such as what the mortgage fraud, what that's about. So really what they do to commit this fraud is they go into the court and ask for a summary judgment without any due process, anything. They sell their, these are the perpetrators, the people stealing the homes. What they do is they'll hold some sort of auction where they sell the property to their own holding company. At a very low price because no one's at the auction because they never advertised it and they come an hour late, so nobody's even there. And then they go to the town court to get the people evicted because now the people have their property stolen and they're considered tenants, so now they owe the landlord rent. And of course, this is all fraud. So, some of the general ideas we need to do is we really need to put a lot of pressure on them to obey the law. We really have to be polite, though, professional, and really do this with a sense of honor, mercy, and justice, and really state that you're coming from the common law grand jury. So you can give your first name. I wouldn't give any more. You can say you're on the grand jury and you're calling to help the victim. And when we call, we really want to speak, if possible, with any sort of authority figure. So we may, if we can, want to talk to sheriffs. We may want to talk to clerks. We want to talk to judges, if possible. And we really want to ask them what they intend to do. Then going forward, we want to say we're unified. We're all there. And we're sending memos, information to these people that they really should be reading, and if they're not, they are silent when there is a moral obligation to speak, and they themselves might be part of the crime if they don't do anything about it. If they say the common law has been revoked, we answer that the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution establishes the rules of the common law, and we, the people, ordain this Constitution, in that the Constitution itself is based on common law. So to say that common law doesn't exist is saying that the Constitution doesn't exist, which is where they think they get their authority from. And so it doesn't make any sense because the Constitution is based in common law, so you can't just abrogate the common law because that would be a violation of the Constitution. And ask them why they're not taking care of the case if there is a violation being taken place. And these are just general rules I'm going over and general ideas. So say that the common law is not revoked. It never has. It cannot be revoked no matter what they do. They have no authority to do that whatsoever. And they just can't do it. And those are some of the things we really want to focus on. Now, I would ask if, and I don't know, I don't think these two people are here, but if either Ronald Paulson is here or Mabel Marson is here, they're more than welcome to speak right now at this time. Did they show up at all, Jan? Anybody else know if they showed up? Okay. I don't see them on the board, so I'm going to assume they didn't show up. And what we're going to do, I didn't send them an email in particular or get in contact with them about showing up, but I think in the near future what we're going to do is we're going to make it a requirement for people who want help from courtroom observers to come to these meetings on Wednesday. Yes?
I can just try to call both of them and see if they'll get on.
Oh, right. That's
Hello.
A good idea. Yes.
Ron Paulson, there is the observers on the Monday night call are there for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'll call them right now.
Can you get onto the call?
You're going to call them?
Oh.
They're on the call now. This is Mr. Paulson on the other end. We're trying to get a hold
okay.
of you.
Thank you, Jan.
Okay. Carl, I called them up.
Okay.
The question on the browser, the problem was the Chrome browser cannot get the calls in action. It's having problems, so Firefox is accessing that information.
Okay, that's good to know.
Want me to call the other party?
Yeah, if you don't mind, that'd be great.
Okay.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Is this John, right? This is John, right?
No, this is Carl right now.
Oh, hi, Carl. This is Barbara. While he's making that call, I was supposed to be last Wednesday when they my son, Anthony Carl Williams, we was going to have a courtroom of observers for him, but
Hello, this is Ron Paulson.
Oh, hello. Hold on a minute, Ron. This is Barbara Williams, then?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And my courtroom reserve thing was canceled because of Ms. Maud, because of the emergency that was for Ms. Maud. So I most
right.
certainly don't want you all to forget about me, sir.
Oh, no, we won't. Could I, and this is maybe the one thing I'll go over now, and I think you've already sent your information in, so we have it, but we have a system now where if you go to committees and in courtroom observers,
mm-hmm.
and then you go under the request courtroom observers, and you click that, there's actually a web form to fill out now. And what this web form actually will do is it makes it easier for us to get the information because that information is emailed to us in a way that is really easy to read, and it has all the information that we want. And if there's some sort of issue with that, and this goes for anybody, not just you, then we can reply back to you and say, hey, we're missing information. And this is a lot easier than sending 5 emails to 5 different people, because this will get to the right people who need it, and we'll be able to, we'll have multiple people who will be able to respond to you really quickly. So, yes?
That's okay. I hear you.
Okay. Yeah, so we didn't forget about your son. And if you want, maybe after, is it Pollock? After Pollock speaks, Paulson, then maybe you can share some details about your son. Is he currently being held in jail right now? Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, maybe if we have some time at the end, you could share some of those details about your son. But for right now, I'd like the Mr. Ron Paulson to speak.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
I got a hold of Mabel also. She'll
okay,
be calling
great.
In.
Great.
I didn't know you guys were talking about me. I was too busy. My wife and I had been packing. We just got finished eating dinner. We took a break to eat dinner because we just got finished putting stuff in our storage and stuff.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I should have contacted you directly, but...
Not a problem.
Yeah, so I'd like to hear more about your case, more details, who we need to call, and...
Hi, this is Mabel calling in.
Hey, Mabel. Hi. We're going to have Ron Paulson speak first, and then we're going to have you speak about your case.
Okay, no problem.
Yep. So I'm going to... Right now, I think I'm going to mute everybody. But...
Okay.
You.
Sure.
Okay. Basically, it's this. I have one company. There's a company out there that everybody should be familiar with. It's called Select Portfolio Services. And Select Portfolio Services is a third party. I call them an interloper. They use banks' names, you know, like you pick babies' names. They use the bank's name and say they want to go after this person's house. They'll say this bank has a claim on this house. My house foreclosed in 2010. And at the time, there was J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, I paid J.P. Morgan Chase money. I've been paying money out at the yin-yang, and I'm broke now. And I just got a credit report that showed this bank that is now being used, U.S. Bank, was paid. They were paid off, and it shows it on the credit report. Well, they've been coming after me with Bank of America for the last 3 years, and now they all of a sudden came up and said, oh, we made a mistake. It wasn't really Bank of America. It was U.S. Bank. But in the meantime, I have Bank of America. I have Bank of America in default in federal court. Now I'm in the Ninth Circuit court with Bank of America, the Court of Appeals. At the same time, I was in a state court fighting my house for U.S. Bank. The judge in that case ruled against me in favor of Bank of America a year ago, and then he just ruled against me in favor of U.S. Bank. This judge was very angry because he was the respondent or recipient of the grand jury's writ of habeas corpus. He wasn't too thrilled about that, so he took it out on me, and he did a summary judgment when I had a trial to have a jury there. And he kept giving the lawyer time, almost like 160, 120 days of time to prove nothing. And so now I'm evicted this Sunday, and the only thing I have left in my bag of tricks to stop it is I have to file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy to stop an eviction. I have to ruin my credit further down the drain to do that. So that's where we're at. I had a phone call from an NLA member this morning from Washington State, and she said she spoke with the sheriff, deputy, and she gave me a guy's name, and I called him, and he basically said, hey, look, we don't know this grand jury stuff, but as far as I know, unless we get something official from a judge, we're coming to your house on Sunday. And that's been the story. Everywhere they're like, They're not recognizing a common law grand jury unless a judge or prosecutor put it together in their mind. They're not looking at the people coming together in common law under the constitutions of the United States and the various states. They're not looking at that. So that's where I'm at now. We've been packing our stuff, and I have, I don't have enough room in the storage that I'm in because I have a pretty big house. So now I have to file bankruptcy so they can't remove me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at.
Okay, so that seems like not only do we want to call the courthouse, but we need to call the sheriff, and we need to tell the sheriff that he is part of the conspiracy, the deputy sheriffs too, that they will personally be held accountable if you are evicted without your due process. And it doesn't matter what the judge says, if he does it illegally and just continues and kicks you out, the deputy, then they're in fault. So we really need to call the sheriff department on that.
And I will tell you this, one other thing. Mm-hmm. When you just mentioned due process, because my due process was violated. And the judge accused me and my spouse, he berated us in front of the courtroom, and we had witnesses there, that we were the abusers of the court system. Because we dare challenge his jurisdiction, and we dare challenge his rulings against whatever bank he decides he wants to go with.
Yeah, and that's totally unfair. So we need to put pressure, and we need to call... we need to call the judge, Daniel A.
Atalia.
And you also have the sheriff's phone number on there?
Yes, his name is Stanley Smith.
Okay. And is that the correct phone number on there? The 951-955-2400?
Yes, that's the number that was given to me. Yes.
Okay. So, let me see.
Now, what may happen is you're going to get intercepted. You're going to either get a receptionist that will send you to another department, and you'll probably never talk to the sheriff.
Okay. Well, I understand you may not talk to the sheriff, but at the very least, if they get 30 phone calls from us, that's an accomplishment, because then they're a little bit scared, because you have 30 people calling in asking why their due process is violated. You have 30 people calling saying that they themselves are part of the conspiracy now if they continue to proceed with this. So I think it's still very important that we call them, and even if we leave a message, that's fine.
And I appreciate that. And my wife is here with me. She appreciates this as well. I really do.
I know. And there's only, we're all over the country, and it's so hard, especially for people to show up to a lot of these cases. And so at the very least, you can call in. Now, do you know of any people in your area who are able to come to your court case, or anybody yet?
Well, my court case is now, it's over. I put an appeal to the state appellate court, and I've also did a complaint to the judicial council, which probably won't go anywhere, but I had affidavits from all the witnesses that happened to be there. Yes, I do have a few friends that are able to go to a court case if I have one.
Okay. Okay, so there's no court case. This is just he's evicting you.
He's just evicting me. He said I was done. And he said he was sick of me being in his courtroom and abusing his court system.
His court system, huh?
Yep.
You know. Okay. Damn, who do these people think they are? So I think definitely the strategy for you is December 20th, that's a Sunday, right?
Yes. This Sunday coming.
Okay, so what I think we need to do is I'll send out an email reminder, probably the 18th, 19th, and 20th, the 18th and 19th, after tonight and maybe tonight too, to remind people to call the sheriff and to call the judge and just inform them that hey, listen, he's. You know, the judge is part of the conspiracy, and the sheriff's going to be part of the conspiracy. And we don't want the sheriff to go to jail or his deputies to go to jail or be indicted. We want the situation to be rectified. And, you know, that's a whole, that's part of mercy and justice that we have to go with. But, you know, if they continue to proceed, then we need to let them know and we need to go forward with indictments. So,
well, I will tell you this. Mm-hmm. When we put this bankruptcy in and we get it stamped from the bankruptcy court, they won't be able to evict because I've just removed myself from, you know, I'm going to another court, and bankruptcy, it stops everything.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's only a temporary fix. The
right.
fix is in that they're going to continue to do it, or the lawyer will see that I'm still in the house and try to find some way to lift the stay and still evict me. And so I have no base of operations to get any court notices or anything. That's the whole purpose, to stop me from fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So the question I have is this. The
mm-hmm.
sheriff, I can tell you the sheriff, he's not a constitutional sheriff. He's not. He's statutory.
Okay.
And even if you say this to him, and I don't care if you're calling from, and I appreciate this, but I don't call.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're calling from Reykjavik, Iceland, which is not a part of the United States. He's not going to heed it. He's just going to figure, okay, just let it go to the message and we'll just delete the message. So
yeah.
If he's not on board with anything of protecting anybody's rights,
mm-hmm.
how do you arrest him? Do you go and get a marshal to do that?
Well, yes. First, what we would do is the process is we would essentially get the affidavits, hear the information, hear the conspiracy that's supposedly going on, and then we send an indictment. And then the process, I think it's either we send him the indictment and then we ask the sheriff to arrest the judge, and if the sheriff won't, then the marshal will. If the marshal will, then we ask the FBI to, and then if none of those, then we really there are other things we can try, but I'd rather not go into that right now.
Yeah, I got
So that's really the strategy that I think we're looking at. We're looking at the sheriff, if not the sheriff, the marshal. If not the marshal, the FBI. And that's really where we're at. So really, at this point, I think anything you could do to stop you from getting evicted is definitely, you know, go do it. I know you're in the process, but yeah, we'll call in. We'll try everything we can. And at this point, I just wish you good luck with everything going forward. And we're
thank you. And with that, I will yield for the next person.
Okay. So. Thank you again. So the next person, Mabel Marson. Are you there? Mabel. Oh, hold on. You might be muted. I think you can unmute yourself. Let me see. Okay, I unmuted you, Mabel.
Okay, I'm here. Okay, and who am I speaking with?
This is Carl.
Carl. Hi, Carl. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. Thanks for reaching out. I was on another conference call, but that's okay. this is more important than anything else. Okay. All right, so I guess I came in when you guys had started, so can you just keep me abreast of what's going on? I know I'm on the call of action or
right.
call to action.
So what we're doing is we're focusing on two cases a week, and these are cases that John had picked. The one case the two cases we picked were the one for Ron Paulson, who just spoke, and then
mm-hmm.
the second one is your case.
Right.
And we really want to know more about what the situation is, what you
mm-hmm.
need us to do,
and
who to call. And maybe if there's something we need to say, we
mm-hmm.
want to hear that too. So with that,
right.
I yield.
Oh, okay, no problem. All right, so, you know, my fight has been for, I would say, let's see, about 4 years, you know, going back and forth with the court. And I think I've put up a good fight. So, you know, just to make a long story short, last year, and it seems to me this is what they have been doing with, you know, just listening in and getting all the people's you know, testimony here is that they're trying to make these cases into where we call it now the tenant-landlord fight. In terms of, you know, throughout this process, in the very end, they're asking you to, oh, send us your lease, you know, and you're living in a foreclosed property, you know, we need to kind of hear from you, bottom line. So what I did, this was, I would say maybe last year or this year, I can't remember when, I sent in, you know, based on the Foreclosure Act of 2009, because I've been in my house pretty much in 2011, January is when I actually bought the house. And with that said, I know the Foreclosure Act went through to, I think it was last year, the end of December, that it was effective. So what I did was we started, you know, I had someone help me. I started the lease from like 2012, when I know they started attacking at that time, you know. And as I said, last year, you know, what they did was, you know, they went ahead, and this is Hunt and Liebert out of Connecticut, which is the plaintiff's, it was U.S. One Bank, I think. See, the thing is, in the midst of that, when I bought the house, I started out with one company called Mid-Island Mortgage. Now, Mid-Island Mortgage, around 2012, when I started having trouble back and forth, they started the, in Connecticut, I think they call it strict motion to foreclose or strict whatever. You know, they're trying to get that out of the right. So, you know, within that phase, I had an FHA loan. You know, I paid, you know, with the PMI. I had a PMI, an FHA, I guess it's a government loan when I got that. Now, after the problem started and they said, okay, we're going to do a strict foreclosure here, they basically went ahead and sold my loan to, I think it was SPS or AMS, American Servicing, somewhere about their LLC. And then what they did was they changed my loan over to a traditional loan, and at the time told me that, you know, I don't no longer need it or, you know, have the PMI, and, you know, after paying over $7,000 for that PMI. So with that said, you know, when they actually came into play, I tried getting a modification, but, you know, they kind of box you into this modification where my mortgage was over $2,000, I think $700 at the time when Mid-Island had added about $700 on my mortgage at the time, and that's why I started having, you know, little issues back and forth. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they gave me a modification like for $2,300. So they're kind of putting you back in that big phase where they just want to see you fail here. So at 3 months down the road, I still could not manage, you know, with that said. And then, you know, after that now, they said, okay, we give up on you. We're not going to give you another modification here. So going forward, you know, it was, as I said, just back and forth of going, serving papers, doing all these different things just to keep afloat. And bottom line, last year what they did was in, I think it was November of 2014, I guess Hunt and Liebert got tired of me because I never gave up. They just went ahead, and one of the attorneys there in the office, Jay Rebus, just went ahead and did a certificate of foreclosure. Now, is this supposed to be done by a judge, or who's supposed to do this? They're bill collectors. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, I mean, you know, I went for a little while there. So earlier this year, you know, I had a sheriff coming out and leaving papers at my door, you know, and obviously they don't know who's in the house because I actually did a lease between me and my sister, and, you know, although I live here with my two children and my fiancé. So, you know, when they got the papers to my door, I actually went to the court, and I think that's when I really put that lease in to say, well, you know, the lease does not expire until 2016, just trying to buy myself some time based on the Foreclosure Act of 2009. So, okay, so anyway, they made a court case, I think it was for October 14th. 15th. And then I hired an attorney, a big mistake. You know, I just figured, you know, it's someone who I've worked with. He's the one that actually, when I bought the house, he did the closing and everything. So, you know, but in other words, I've used him for other circumstances like car accidents or whatever. So he says, oh, you know, and they're all in cahoots together, believe you me. Oh, I know the, you know, those folks that work with Hunt and Lieber. What I could do is try to see if I could drag you. Maybe they, I could have you pay, you know, rent for $2,000-something. So obviously, again, they're trying to box you into this landlord/tenant mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. So apparently that didn't work out. We went on October 14. Before I got to the steps of the court, he called me and he says, oh, you know, and I didn't even know that I had to be present. He called me that morning and said, I'm on my way to the court. I thought he was going to represent me and at least discuss, you know, what the outcome he wants. You know, I paid him whatever the outcome is supposed to be, and I was shocked. But anyway, when I got there, he says they don't want to budge, you know, they want you to walk away. And right at this moment, you know, we're... They're not going more than December 18th, which is this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I said, really, you know, I mean, if you foreclosed last year and you claim, because what they did was they sent an acquisition of abandonment. I'm not sure if you know, it's something looking like a W-2 or a little pay stub to say, well, you know, the house is worth X amount and it's being whatever the prices are, 300 and something thousand. I mean, that's old. And now, I didn't abandon my property. I'm still here. Why would you call that abandonment? You know what I mean? You know, it's just ridiculous. But in, as I said, that's in a nutshell. And really, you expect me to really just get up and walk out, and then you come and claim it and say, well, you know, that's it. So come on. Which one is it? You know, I abandoned it last year, so why am I still here?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the judge will not see that. You know, they're giving and they ruled in favor of the plaintiff to have me get out on the 18th. So that's
okay,
pretty much in a nutshell of what's
so
going on.
So from what I understand, your court case is already done with.
It's already done with.
You
it's
just need
so-called. Right.
We need people to, should we call the judge?
I would say the judge.
Okay.
Right now, I'm sorry.
Oh, we need the information for the judge. I don't see that. I only see the marshal. So if you can provide information about the judge to call, that would be great.
Okay. All right. So are you looking on the intake or because I know?
I don't have. I'm looking at the actual call to action page. I don't see it there, and I don't have.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if you could just email me that at.
Okay. And
yeah, just email me at Carl, K-A-R-L, at National Liberty Alliance.
Okay, let me just write that down. Hold on one second. Okay, so that's K-A-R-L at National Liberty now. Okay.
Yes.
And do you have a phone number, Carl, or?
Yes. So my phone number, if you don't hear back from me, is 518.
Okay. �592924240.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And if you don't hear back from me that I got your email, send me or give me a call because I'm having a little bit of difficulty with that email address right now. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, it was just recently set up, so I'm not quite sure what it could be, but I should be able to get them, but just in case.
Right, right. So as you said, you need the judge's phone number. I have a fax number. You know, I guess when we did the intake and everything through Linda, all
just,
that information
just,
is good. But...
Yeah, you can send me the phone or fax, but I think we'll just ask people to phone in.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you need the attorney that accompanied me? The thing is, the attorney, somehow we kind of missed putting my personal attorney on my, I think it's now on the intake, but it wasn't on the affidavit. But what I did was I sent him all the documentation, and I sent him the habeas corpus. I went ahead and sent him the default that was sent out just to alert him to say, well, this is the next step or next action that I'm taking now. I'm not naturally, you know, walking away. You're not going to really be, you know, this is not going to be resolved by me just walking away, pretty much. So do you need his phone number, too, or is he out of it at this point?
No, unless he really was, and I don't know this information from what you told me, unless he was really part of the conspiracy to...
I doubt it in a sense, but you know when you're, you know, they call them counsel, and, oh, is there anything else, counsel? It's like, oh, no, blah, blah, blah. Does she understand? Yes, she does. So, you know, in a sense, I don't think he's in cahoots, really, so I can't really blame him.
So I think what we'll try to do is just call the judge and the marshal, because those are the two that can actually do something about it. And those are you really want to pressure. If we need to pressure your attorney, we will in the future.
Right. So, yeah.
I think right now just focus on those two. And unfortunately, Connecticut does not have any sheriffs, so we have to call the U.S. Marshal.
It's Marshal, yes.
Yep, so just for everyone's reference, just call the U.S. Marshal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those numbers are also on the call, on the call to action page.
Okay.
Anything
right.
else?
And I had a specific one that actually served those papers at the time, and we do have him also on the intake. So, you know, I'll give you all the information that I do have, again, on the judge and also on the marshal that we have, okay?
Okay, that's great. And, you know, thank you for calling in.
And any suggestions for me at this point? Because naturally, as I said, you know, I'm not going anywhere.
Well,
you know, and what my attorney said to me is that, you know, it's a weekend, it's Friday, and naturally they would not come back out, the sheriff, most likely sometime in January, you know, but not that I'm sitting waiting for that time frame, and that's why, you know, I brought this to the NLA's attention to see if I could get that help going forth.
Yeah, and maybe we'll also make it clear that you're trying to kick a woman out before Christmas too, and
exactly, and that's,
you know,
what I think.
That's a real shame.
With two children, so. Exactly, right.
So maybe that will get to think a little bit, but
get the picture.
Yeah.
Oh yep. Boy. Okay. All right, Carl. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. One last thing before we go back to Barbara Williams. I do want to mention, I mentioned the Quorum Observer request, but what I'm also going to mention right now, too, is in the future, instead of sending an email out to everybody, what I'm going to do is I'll send out emails to just people who are part of the Courtroom Observer group. And those are people who signed up to be Courtroom Observers. And the reason for that is because I'll be sending out emails like the day before. I'll be sending out a lot of emails. And I want people to know that if you want to be a Courtroom Observer, that there'll be more emails sent out, more reminders than with the general email. So if you haven't signed up for that yet, what you can do is you can go to the committee's page again. You can hover over the Courtroom Observers, and then there should be something called Join Courtroom Observer Group. And what that will do is that will put you as part of a Courtroom Observer, and part of the Courtroom Observer Group on the site. And so that way you'll get more frequent reminders because you're more active, and we're really trying to cut down unnecessary emails, but at the same time, send enough where the right information gets out. So just a reminder for people, if they want to get more frequent emails about Quorum Observer announcements, that is where you need to go and join for that. So does anybody else have any other questions or clarifications? And remember, I think I muted some people, so I'll try muting some people right now and see if anybody has any questions.
No. I got stuff eating so many. So, you're going to be visiting tomorrow.
Question from Jan in Michigan.
Okay.
Mr. Polson, I'm trying to understand his case. He's basically has been paying on his house, or his house has paid off?
So what I understand and the way this fraud works is you're either paying your mortgage or it's already paid off, but what they do is they sell it to another company. So mortgage A company sells it to mortgage B company, and then just as you're about to pay it off, or maybe you already paid it off, the company who got the new mortgage will foreclose on your property, and they'll take your property even though you've already paid them and try to resell it back. And they'll try to make you as a tenant, or they'll try to say there was a mistake and you owe us more money or something along those lines. And that's where I see it. Maybe Mr. Olson could give us more of a...
Because my understanding is Ronald said that he had the documentation that said that this bank was paid off.
Yeah, absolutely. But they'll still, because technically your mortgage and your home is not technically owned by you, they can still go after you for it, even though you've completely paid it off. And, you know, they'll go through these schemes and all that. And, you know, it's really crazy what they do. You know, you could say, hey, I paid you off, and they'll say, great, we're taking your house tomorrow.
Actually, what happens? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, what happens is since 1965, when they took silver out of the coin, debts can only be discharged. It works on an entirely different system. There is no silver to back the money. So you never really own your homes when they're bought on a mortgage that is, since the money changers got into their business, the money changing, back in the 1960s. So it's an entirely different process. It's not like you own something. After you buy it, you never really own it because you use that transmitting utility, that currency, so to speak. And if that's where Ashwander versus the Tennessee Valley Authority decision comes in, is that if you are using the currency, basically, you cannot go back and sue the company that is providing you with that currency. And that goes into Ashwander versus Tennessee Valley Authority, as well as the Clearfield Doctrine. And that's what they're pettifogging with. So I'm just throwing that out there. But I'm wondering if Mr. Paulson is still on the call. Maybe he can ask if this company that said that they own the mortgage, if they have the instrument, the back of the instrument that shows that they are the holder in due course, front and back. So it would be interesting to know that. And I don't know whether I'm saying everything clear or not, because it's kind of just, you know, coming off of the stuff that I've learned in the past. And I do understand a little bit about, in principle.
Yeah, and that's a very good point you brought up. I don't really know much about the whole fraud, but that, if you're backing it up with court cases and going there, that would make sense based upon what we're seeing today.
Sure, and what they've done is they've just taken the wording and they have used it to their own benefit. And another thing, too, is that the I kind of got carried away with what I was thinking. Oh, that's all right. But, I know what I was going to say. This is another aspect of it, because there is these people who are, they used to call them loan sharks, you know, they're kind of licensed to go ahead and collect, the collection agents. And what they do is they go through people's files, they go to the credit bureaus, and they start looking at different files, because it's all pretty much open to the public, or at least it used to be. And now I'm going back like 20 years when I'm talking about this, but it was like a business that collectors would get into. They'd actually go to classes in order to learn how to go about to make money by collecting debt. So they would go to the credit companies and they would get a hold of someone's social security number and so on and so forth. And then, like portfolio recovery, I think that he mentioned that, they start calling the people and intimidating them until the individual will contract with them by calling them back or something like that, and, you know, kind of getting all shook up about it. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that even if the thing is paid off, if it shows that it was deficient in some way, what they do is they use that as a threat against them, and people, you know, believe that they're really liable for this, and they start shelling over money, you know, to get them off their backs, and they really don't owe anything. And that's when you ask for the instrument front and back that shows that they are the holder in due course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good advice. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Can you define instrument, Nikki?
Well, what happens is that when because there is no money, okay, when you sign a contract, a mortgage contract, when that mortgage contract is satisfied, when the debt is satisfied, or the presumed debt is satisfied, what happens is that it is monetized. And when it's monetized, there's a stamp put on the back and it is signed off on. It's a negotiable instrument. So when that happens, that's why you ask for the back of it as well as the front of it. And if that person, like when you cash a check, when someone pays you, say, well, this is yours, you know, you get an instrument to show that that's yours. It's a contract. So you want to see the contract front and back to assure that that is a legal contract that they're trying to come after you for.
Okay. That's good. One thing I want to do before I forget is I want Barbara Williams to maybe talk about her son's case a little bit, because I did say that last week we were going to touch upon that. So if she could just maybe give details, updates on that, and then I don't think we'll be able to do a shout-out this week, but maybe if it's coming up pretty soon, we could do that. So, Barbara, if you're still there, you're welcome to talk now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. First of all, I want to say I appreciate NLA. Since I joined, I've been listening to different ones call in and listen to the different issues, and I have been very impressed with what I've heard. I looked online and I saw that how many members you have, and now I'm looking at like 4,692. I said, that's awesome. That's a lot of people coming together with a common cause. My son is named Anthony Troy Williams, and I know one time I said before that he was a private attorney general. Mm-hmm. I don't know a whole lot about private attorney generals, but I do know that there are a lot of them here in the United States of America. He's also an attorney in fact, and he's never, ever told anyone that he was a licensed attorney, never told anyone that. So he's been charged by the Bar Association of Florida for practicing law without a license. Also, he was charged $100,000. He had a $100,000 bond. It was five charges with practicing law without a license, and then five charges for false official statement. Right now, he's been in jail since November the 9th. He's coming from Hawaii, got off the plane in Florida, at the airport, at the baggage claim there, the police is there, the media, Channel 7 was there. They put handcuffs on my son, took him to jail. What they didn't expect was for him to get out as soon as he did, because the same night he went in, he was bunted out from a bondsman from Texas, bunted him out. After he got home, then they called him early the next morning and told him, well, you need to come back in because there are some stipulations to the bond. Now, all this they're saying to him after he got out, and my take of it is what is that they did not expect him to get out there soon, so they had to come up with something to keep him in there to ride things out for everything that he's working for to fall to pieces. So he was talking to me, you know, because I'm in Texas and he's in Florida. Talking to me, and I told him, I said, well, we want you to come in, go in and sign the bond, whatever they got for you to sign. So, of course, when he got there, they locked him up. When they locked him up, the stipulations they added to it was they did a nebbia bond. And the nebbia bond was that you have to have collateral for so much money. Okay, we couldn't come up with the collateral because they want the house. There were $45,000 of equity in the house or some type of collateral that was up to $45,000. They didn't want no money. They wanted collateral. They knew that this was holding in there because him, his dad and I, we don't own our home. The people that we do know that own homes or just buying homes, they're either the lien with their house was not clear. There was something going on with it. So he's still sitting there. I'm saying all this to say that I was able to go to two of his hearings while we were there. And my son, he's supposed to, he really wants to represent himself. And some of the friends there thought, okay, let's get you a lawyer, lawyer's license, and let that lawyer get you out on bond. Well, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Because we feel like the lawyers, they pretty much in cahoots with one another, and they're not going to, you know, just certain things they're not going to do. Okay, so the lawyer was asked to file a habeas corpus for him. She in turn said that he had to file his own habeas corpus, that she couldn't file it. That was like, we didn't understand what that was all about. So when they did file it, when it was set because she didn't file it, they told him that he needed to file it. So that's when it's before him, they didn't accept that. Like, okay. So next time we went to court again, it's another hearing. The judge asked, no. The first time we were there, and we talked to the lawyer, and she said, well, since you're his mother, and maybe you can say something on his behalf, and maybe we'll touch the judge's heart. And I'm like, well, okay, I can do that. But when I talked to my son from the jail, he said, well, Mama, I need to say something on my behalf because everything that this detective said about me was not true. It's on record. Now, this person, that person, is not true. I need to say something. So I tell the lawyer, okay, my son needs to talk. She did tell me, well, I don't think he needs to say anything, but you can say something. Okay, so she goes and talks to him. We sit in court. She talks to him and saying that, okay, your mom can talk, but you can't talk. And she told him the only way you can say something is you would have to fire me. You have to temporarily fire me, and then you can say something. Well, what you think happened? She got up. She said, well, Mr. Williams temporarily fired me. So, of course, they took the judge off. He's like, oh, so you going to just file like that? You can't file high like that? You need to make your mind up. There wasn't no making his mind up. She told him that he couldn't say anything unless he temporarily fired her.
Okay.
Well, the judge got upset.
I do want to interrupt because we do have to end our meeting soon. So really what I think we need now from you is if you can send me information about any future – does he have another court case coming up?
He has a court case coming up January the 7th.
Okay. So send a courtroom observer request. I know you might have filled out the information again, but – just send it again with all the information we have there, just in case there may be some things missing, and we'll see what we can do. Because we're really trying to organize. Be quite honest with you, we're really backed up with paperwork. No matter what anybody says, we are really backed up. So we're going to try our best to do what we can, but I just don't want to give anybody a false expectation that, oh, sure, we can get you the paperwork by next week, because that may not be the case. So just send us what you can through the Court Observer form request, and we'll try our best to possibly get him into a call to action. We'll have to, of course, prove that with leadership, and we'll move forward from there.
Hey, Carl?
Yes?
If you wanted to end the recording, we can end the recording, and I'd like to ask Barbara a question or two.